Yeah, that's a really powerful question.
That's a beautiful question.
That's a very wise question, Lauren.
Hello and welcome to The Right Question, a radio program and podcast featuring authors from the American West and beyond. The Right Question is supported in part by Humanities Montana and members of Montana Public Radio, and by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. I'm Lauren Korn, speaking with novelist Daniel Tam Claiborne, author of Transplants, the stories of Lynn, a Chinese student closer to her many pets than to her peers, and Liz, a Chinese-American teacher grieving her mother's sudden death. Alternating between Liz and Lynn's perspectives, Transplants is a lyrical and moving exploration of race, love, power, and freedom. Transplants asks its readers, and these are Daniel's words, who gets to belong, who gets left behind, and how can fleeting encounters alter someone's trajectory forever? This conversation was facilitated in partnership with the 2025 Get Lit Festival in Spokane, Washington, which took place in April. Daniel, thank you so much for joining me. Welcome to The Right Question.
Thanks so much, Lauren. It's a pleasure to be here.
Before we dive into your novel, Transplants, I want to talk a bit about you and your background. The About page on your website is really fascinating. It's really dynamic, filled with writing credits and public programming, social and cultural outreach, international development. I mean, there's a lot there. So will you give me and our listeners a little window into you, into your background?
Sure. Clearly a good reminder for me to probably trim that down a little bit, but yeah, absolutely. I'm an Asian American writer, producer, and nonprofit director. I had a lot of sort of a bulk of my work experience had been in and around mainland China for about 5 years. So I lived on and off in China for a while. And I sort of, my goal in thinking about my kind of early career was wanting to go into international development. And so was really kind of focused on thinking about minority populations in China and kind of human rights, things that are, you know, very difficult to sort of access right now. But those, that were sort of my focus kind of going into a graduate school program. I guess I'll say that sort of my primary vocation has always kind of been like within the writing realm. It's something that has been near and dear and close to my heart for a number of years, but it's never been the primary means through which I was able to sort of make a living. And so there's always been things that I've kind of done that have had to kind of supplement that writing work or substantiate it in different ways. And so one of those early vehicles was international development. And I think naively I went into the field thinking that I just wanted to travel, right? Like I wanted an excuse to sort of like be based abroad, have experiences. I graduated college during the kind of height of the global recession, or at least the sort of first of now, you know, perhaps multiple upcoming recessions. There was a sense of just wanting to be able to leave the country for a while. And of course, I felt very privileged having the opportunity to do that. And also connect with my identity. So there was a lot of my own personal background that I wasn't really able to access for most of my life. My mom is Chinese, and so I'm a mixed race Chinese American, but I'd never been to China. I didn't speak the language. And so graduating from college, I felt like this was a really great opportunity to be able to be based in China and sort of learn a little bit about what that identity means to me, and also get a sense of living in a country where, had I not had the experience of being able to be there, I think there would be a huge part of my own background that I would just never fully understand. And so that first kind of outlet of going to China, I think, was an opportunity to sort of try to make sense of that. Where that failed, I think, is kind of where the writerly instincts come in, is sort of that kind of questioning and wondering, you know, what it is about your own story that feels resonant. And so that was kind of the first foray I had into China. I was really excited about being there. I wanted to study international development to have a chance to go back there. Over the course of many years, there's been sort of like twists and turns in that career path. I sort of left the international development world, went into consulting, decided that wasn't really the right fit for me either. I feel really fortunate to have landed at a nonprofit where I work now called the Serica Initiative, that does work around raising awareness of the Asian diaspora in America. And so it's a really, I feel like a place where a lot of my interests can converge. And so there's work around kind of narrative storytelling, narrative change that we do. I had the opportunity to work with PBS as a documentary producer, so sitting not quite behind the camera. I don't really know any of the technical aspects of the filmmaking world, but at least the sort of narrative arc and the story building that kind of goes into these long form pieces we write about trying to capture the breadth and depth of the Asian American experience. And all of that feeds into my writing in one way or another as well. So I feel really fortunate to be in a position where a lot of these things kind of dovetail.
Yeah, hearing you talk about your own background and your trip to China and the ways that that trip succeeded and failed, it's obvious to me that that was a great incentive or inspiration for this novel, Transplants. Now that you've sort of introduced yourself, Daniel, let's introduce the two protagonists of this novel. Let's dive into Transplants. This is the story of two women, right? Lynn, a woman just entering university in China, and Liz, a Chinese American woman who's traveled to China to the university where Lynn is a student to teach English. So let's, if you can, introduce further these two women to our listeners. It sounds like your experience and Liz's might be not one and the same, but very similar in maybe the emotional and motivation, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'll start with Lynn a little bit. Lynn is someone who doesn't really feel ever at home in the country that she was born into. And part of that stems from this shyness or this sort of reluctance to engage with other people. And most of the kind of confidants in her life are not human, right? The book starts with her having this menagerie of pets who she cares deeply for. And even the people who are closest to her, really her mom, you know, don't really quite understand exactly what it is about her personality that makes her kind of unwilling to kind of socialize or engage with people. And kind of her main desire for Lynn is to make a friend, right? That's kind of like the one big ask that she has of her entering university. And so Lynn, right off the bat, we sort of see her as this kind of outlier who, although she is a native Chinese person who grew up very close to the town where she's attending university, she doesn't really have close connections with her peers. She's ostracized by her roommates and just really misunderstood. And so she's coming into the novel kind of in that, with that sort of baggage or that emotional kind of background. And Liz is entering as a different kind of outlier. You know, she's someone who is Chinese American, grew up in rural Ohio, and she didn't really have much of a Chinese American community there, didn't really understand a lot of her Chinese identity. Her own mother, who we learn very early on in the novel, very recently passed away, never really gave her the tools to understand or make sense of what the identity is for her and feel sort of pride and comfort with it. And so it's something that she's always worn, like this kind of too big coat, not really knowing where to place it. And so she comes to China for a couple of reasons. One is sort of to get a better sense of what that experience is like for her. Maybe that she'll feel more accepted, she'll find some kinship. But also is to sort of make sense of her own mother's passing, trying to understand some of the history that enabled her mother to come to the U.S. from her own on-the-ground research in a way that her mother had never been able to divulge to her. And so they sort of meet in at this place where they're both a little bit fish out of water. Liz, similar to Lynn, is ostracized in her case by the other American teachers who are there at the university, who are all, you know, kind of white male Americans. They don't really see her as someone who they can find a lot of commonality with. And so she's struck by the sense of not really having a community of teachers who she can engage with, and at that point is not able to be close with any of her students as well.
The story, or these stories, these intertwining stories, seem to me a really lovely, empathetic way to be in conversation with the geopolitics of the U.S. and China, the relationship between these two countries. Can I ask you a big question? Can you talk a little bit about the history of these two countries and where these two women are then finding themselves in the midst of?
Absolutely. I will do my best to answer. And I realized that there was a part of your question that I didn't answer too, that first part about, you know, whether Liz's experience in some ways kind of dovetails with my own. And I think there is a lot kind of there, absolutely, just in terms of, you know, that sort of searching and that fascination, and also in some ways that letdown. You know, I think coming in with a lot of expectations around what it means to finally belong, and then faced with the reality that once again, you know, you're sort of outside of an experience or outside of a culture that even though there are entry points into, there are enough differences that it makes it really hard to fully be able to express yourself. So I think that's some of the challenges that Liz engages with early on. But to answer your question about the geopolitics, certainly, you know, I really value and admire a lot of the novelists who have tried to do a long span in terms of trying to cover the history of U.S. engagement with Asia or U.S. engagement with China. For me, it's something that while I engage with the history and the culture, it's not something that I feel like I'm an expert in. And so one of the cheats that I sort of used is setting the novel very contemporarily. My own experience in China, at least the first time that I went, was sort of 2009, 2011. And so originally when I had conceived or started writing this book, the time period was going to be kind of based around that same era, which is something of a golden age, I would say, in terms of U.S.-China relationships. It was the early Obama years. There was a lot of discussion about engagement, a desire to really want to strengthen cultural ties. There was a huge influx of Chinese students who were coming to American universities and a lot of American students who were studying abroad in China. A lot of research and discussion at the time. Social media was still open. It was very close to being clamped down in that time. And so over the course of my own couple of years in China, there began to be a big shift in terms of that relationship as well. But, you know, Facebook and Twitter were all being able to be used in China kind of in that early to, or sort of that mid to late 2000 period. And of course, I would say, you know, right now we're at a very different point in history. And certainly the novel takes place over the course of 1 year that spans 2019 to 2020. And so already there, you know, we're faced with some of the headwinds that were existing today. You know, even before we sort of get into COVID, there's a lot that has to do with the trade war, this movement away from engagement into competition, and really a kind of enmity, this sort of sense that we're not able to be even competitive partners in a lot of ways. We're actually just... we're at odds with each other, and it's a zero-sum game. And you know, in this hegemonic fight for global dominance, only one of us will be on top. And so it feels a lot more antagonistic and lacking that sort of, exactly as you said, that kind of human dimension that I feel like is so important for us to understand others and be able to kind of see individuals outside of the headlines that we sort of get through media. And I think that's true on the U.S. side as well as the Chinese side.
This is maybe a irrelevant or a moot point or question, but I wonder how this book would have been different had it been written about this time, or even not even about this time, but during this time, right? Like, I think I read somewhere online that this book is, what, 15 some years in the making. You've been working on this for a long time. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. It's certainly a story that's kind of sitting within me for that period. I wouldn't say that it's all of an active writing time. But absolutely, it's a story that I've been thinking about ever since that first trip out to China, which was in 2009. And so, yeah, absolutely. I think in terms of bringing it into even more of a contemporary time, I've struggled with that too. I think there was a reason why the novel was bookended at a year point, partly because there was so much that was unknown about how we were experiencing the throes of the pandemic and what outcomes we would find from that. And so the characters similarly were kind of experiencing those uncertainties in the same way that me as a writer was writing them, as readers are reading them. But I think even now, there's just so much that has changed, even just in the last couple of years. And I don't know that I would have landed at the same conclusion that I did in terms of how each of those characters kind of chooses to make their life going forward, what they see as the pros and benefits of kind of staying or leaving or sort of making a home in one country or the other. I think there would be a lot of other factors, both personal and kind of external, that would be motivating them in different ways in 2025.
You're listening to A Conversation with Daniel Tam Claiborne. I'm Lauren Korn. This episode of The Right Question is supported by Bookworks of Whitefish, offering new books of all genres, stationery, and puzzles. Open 11 to 6 Monday through Saturday and located in downtown Whitefish in the 3rd and Spokane Building. want to get into some of the movement of transplants. Lynn, she is our Chinese character, and I don't want to spoil anything for our listeners, so I'll use the euphemism. Lynn finds herself in America, in Ohio, at a community college when COVID hits. Tell me, Daniel, how you went about characterizing this country, the U.S., what you wanted to spotlight about our country by allowing your readers to basically see, you know, its systems, its infrastructures through the perspective of someone not from this country, from China in this case.
Yeah, I have to say this is one of the most fun parts of the novel to write. I think Lynn's early chapters coming to the U.S., I think just because... you know, for me, I grew up in Brooklyn, and I spent all of my life there until going to college. And I went to school at Oberlin, and so there was like sort of an Ohio connection that has always fascinated me. But mm-hmm. I think like Lynn, even in going out to Seattle, where I live now, where I've been living for the last 8 years, there was a huge amount of wonder and astonishment and bewilderment at so much of this country, because I felt that my life had been so sheltered. Like I'd only been able to see this very, very specific slice, like very, very urban, big city living. And it wasn't really until getting the opportunity to kind of leave New York for college, and then even more recently kind of be able to see more of the country when we road tripped out to Seattle, where we eventually settled, that there was, you know, so many things that I wouldn't necessarily have ever conceived of that were brought to my attention. And so I think like Lynn, it was very, in some ways, very easy to assume, even though, you know, I was born in this country, I've lived here my whole life. I think it was very easy to assume a perspective of someone who was very, very new to this place, because, you know, it feels like anywhere you go in America, it can be kind of like vastly different versions of itself. You know, for her, you know, there, she's coming from a very rural area in China. And so maybe some of the rural aspects are not new to her, but in terms of, you know, there's so many other, you know, the sort of the strip malls, the industrialization, the highway systems, you know, there are other things that I feel like, are very, very different in terms of the way that she's used to experiencing life.
We've been talking about this trip, mm-hmm. Lynn coming west, and maybe now is a good time to read a passage from Transplants. Daniel, will you read a passage and maybe give a little context about where we are in the novel and who Lynn is with, what they're doing, and where we're finding her when sure. this excerpt takes place?
Absolutely. Yeah, so Lynn has befriended a classmate at the community college named Gua, and the two of them are heading west, leaving from Ohio on their way to Yellowstone. Not really at this point in the novel very sure of their destination, but they see Yellowstone as a sort of a refuge, as somewhere where they could wait out the height of the pandemic. And they're going through South Dakota, and they've spent the whole day driving, and so this is at the end of a long day where they are in Deadwood. And there are very few places that are open. Of course, this is still the height of the pandemic, so there are no hotels, there are very few restaurants, but there is one sort of gleaming restaurant sign, and Lynn is starving. You know, they haven't been eating very much all day. And so when Gua insists that they kind of go in and decide, you know, to get some takeout food, it seems like a no-brainer. But Lynn is really trepidatious about that. She's worried about the way in which individuals might sort of see her and Gua and make assumptions about them, and whether or not aggression might ensue as a result. And so this passage picks up right after Gua has entered that restaurant and come out with food, and they're on their way back to their car. Lynn couldn't explain what she was feeling. She didn't think it was normal to have this strange discomfort, this creeping paranoia. It wasn't being the target of hate as much as it was the anticipation of it. It became a survival instinct, to curl herself inward, small enough that there was no surface area left to attack. Lynn wanted to believe in that most quintessential thing about America, that everyone was entitled to their own beliefs. She couldn't blame people for wanting to keep things the way they were, for turning away the outsiders, the people who came in with their own unfounded opinions about a country they barely understood. It was a country founded on aggression, where in order to be right, someone else had to be wrong. But thinking about the people who lived here, who had to endure injustices like that every day, made Lynn feel like her grief was small and petty by comparison. Lynn walked back to the car gingerly, the ground like a pane of glass she had to prevent from cracking. Liz had said that homesickness was for people who couldn't assimilate. It's only when you don't feel like you fit in that you start to miss the things that are familiar. No matter what she was experiencing, Lynn knew one thing for sure. No one could relate to it more than Liz. To be accepted and not by your own kind, never truly knowing where you belong. With the two countries jockeying over her loyalties, Lynn wondered what it would be like not to pick either side. She decided to embrace her foreigner status, a person who belonged nowhere.
Perfect. Daniel, you've already said at the beginning of our conversation that these themes of belonging, they're sort of part and parcel of your own experience, especially when you went to China, but also as someone of Chinese American descent in here in America. You know, ideas of paranoia, grief, homesickness, absence, all of these things feel like part of that experience. But what I'm wondering, apart from the writing of books like this, or of this book in particular, what kind of balms have you found to these emotions, to these experiences as a person, ways that you've worked through them or even against them sometimes?
Yeah, absolutely. I think as someone who is coming from a mixed race identity, there's always a layer of inauthenticity and also a kind of a layer of like guilt and shame kind of around that experience. I think especially as anti-Asian hate was on the rise in the early days of the pandemic, there was a pervasive sense among members of my community, family, and others that folks were feeling a lot of anxiety, a lot of fear. And as much as I wanted to empathize with them, and I did, and as much as I wanted to relate to those experiences, I knew that fundamentally as a factor of kind of who I was in my own identity, that I would never feel the same level of interrogation or outsiderness or foreignness as some of those others. And so I think being an ally is such an important part of this, of relating to anyone who is experiencing trauma and violence, is trying to put yourself into their shoes, into their experiences. I think that even as someone who shares part of that experience, there was a huge amount of kind of imposter syndrome for me of feeling like, am I doing enough to really be an advocate for people who are experiencing something that is, exponentially more challenging than I have, that I have the privilege of being in this world. And so I think community spaces are really important for that, for, being able to find safe spaces where you can talk about experiences and not have the specter of judgment or harm or perceptions of others kind of filtering that experience. And I think being able to speak that truth, whether it's at, community forums, whether it's with nonprofit listening sessions, whether it's through self-expression on individual essays or blogs or websites or social media, I think those are really important vehicles for folks to be able to process trauma and process challenge in the face of adversity. So I think that's kind of like where my thought goes at first. And I think there's, kind of levers that exist that maybe are proximal or tangential to that, which are that in order to lessen that burden on individuals who are experiencing that, the fears that they have, the very credible threats that exist, I think we as a society need to do a better job of educating ourselves and each other about both the lived histories of individuals who in some cases are very different from us, and also how that history has already informed what's happening in the present. Lynn eventually finds a confidant and a friend in this older Japanese American woman in Seattle, who herself has experienced incarceration. And so this idea that this kind of historical note still reverberates kind of across time and space and feels like it bears on the present is something that, again, is important for us as a society to recognize, to acknowledge, to admit to own up to, and then to ensure that it doesn't happen again.
Yeah, that's a good point. Freedom or agency, I think you absolutely used at the beginning of our conversation. Yeah. You said something, Daniel, about the fact that the experiences of these characters, while there are parallels, they're not your exact experience. And there are things that you had to certainly learn and I'm sure fictionalize in order to create these characters in this story. And one of which is you are a male-bodied person. You are writing from the perspectives of two women who, over the course of this novel, come to some conclusions about gender, about their relationships with the opposite sex, certainly about the disparities between the opportunities given to men and women. I think I'm wondering how you decided to approach gender as you were conceiving of this story, how you wanted gender to be sort of spotlit or highlighted in the way that it ended up being so in the novel.
Fantastic question, Lauren. I appreciate you asking that too. And also in a way that is very delicate and diplomatic too. I think I can kind of start with the fact that I had written this short story collection that in some way centers, if not my own experience, one that was very close to my own. This idea of a mixed race Chinese American male young teacher who was living and working in rural China. And some of the feedback that I got from that, from others, but also even in my own, you know, kind of revisiting that work over the course of many years after, was that there were so many individuals who were really essential to that experience who never had a chance to weigh in on kind of what their perspectives were in relation to the events that were taking place. And I really took that to heart. And I think it sort of dovetails with something that we talked about a little bit earlier about this novel being kind of 15 years in the making, was that I think there was this question that kind of continued to nag me around this idea of power and gender dynamics, especially when it comes to expat relationships. And I think that was a factor that it was just something that I wanted to explore in different ways. And so I sort of wanted to see how a kind of interpersonal dynamic like that might play out on the page. And as you mentioned, you know, the novel ended up focusing on two female perspectives. There didn't seem to be a place where having a male voice in there, I think, would have been necessarily additive to that. I think part of the exercise in wanting to see Lynn and Liz as fully realized, you know, kind of independent and kind of dynamic individuals who are not burdened by expectations around certainly their race and ethnicity, but I think also around their gender. And I think in that coming of age experience.
That was Daniel Tam Claiborne, author of Transplants, out now from Regalo Press, distributed by Simon & Schuster. To listen to this conversation again, to share it with friends, or to learn more about Daniel, head to mtpr.org. You've been listening to The Right Question. This episode was produced by Chris Moyles and me. I'm your host, Lauren Korn. Chris also engineered this episode. The artwork for The Right Question was designed by Molly Russell. Funding for The Right Question is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. Many thanks to Humanities Montana for supporting this program since 2008. And thank you for listening. The Right Question is a production of Montana Public Radio.